1 2 1 2.
Can you believe that's us? Yeah, the mics are working. Okay, good morning and welcome to today's meeting of the Police, Fire and Rescue Board, Monday the 27th of August. Can we just go around the table, just do a brief introduction before we get started? So I'm Councillor Stephen Curran, Chair of this Board and elected member for Dalkeith Ward.
Kevin Anderson, Head of Customer and Housing Services.
Ricky Moffat, Head of Commercial Operations.
David Ward, Station Manager, Prevention and Protection.
Steve Gourley, the Local Senior Officer for the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service.
I'm Margaret Brewer, Service Manager, Community Justice, and I give apologies for Alison White, who would normally be here and will be at the next meeting.
Peter Smale, Councillor for East and Provost, and I give apologies for Kieran Munro.
Jim Muirhead, Councillor for Midlothian South.
Debbie McCall, Councillor for Pennycook.
Kerry Simpson, Local Area Commander for Midlothian.
Good morning, Leslie Clark, Divisional Commander.
Okay, thank you for that. Do we need to put apologies in for Councillor Parry? She's on maternity leave. But
we'll put
there should be apologies.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, declarations of interest. Do we have any declarations?
Can I just mention under order of business that the Chair has agreed that item 5.3 on the agenda, which is Let's Rock Scotland feedback, be taken as the first main item of business immediately after the minutes. Okay, thank you.
Thanks. That moves us on to the minutes. Any matters arising from the minutes?
Chair, just to mention in terms of page 5 of the papers, it's 5.2.1. This was the annual review of policing, and there was a draft submission before members at the last board, and there were no changes or amendments received to that, so that was submitted to the Scottish Police Authority as members had seen it.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. Any other matters arising? These minutes are approved. Here takes on the public reports, and like I said, we'll go to 5.3. We'll take that first. Let's Rock Scotland, the report by Head of Commercial Operations, Rick Moffat.
Thanks, Chair. So as most people around the table will be aware, on the weekend of the 23rd and the 24th of June this year, Let's Rock Scotland brand held two music events in Dalkeith Country Park. The first one, the Saturday, with approximately 20,000 people there, and on the Sunday, approximately 10,000. In addition, up to 3,000 campers were being provided for on the night of the Saturday. So, Chair, the purpose of this report is to give some initial feedback following these events. As people around the table, particularly Fire and Rescue and Police Scotland, be aware, and they're part of the Safety Advisory Group that I chair, and that takes place, meetings take place on the last Friday of every month. So prior to the Let's Rock Scotland events, there was a number of meetings where we kind of discussed the event, and the primary function of that group is to make sure the event is run as safely as it possibly can be. We do have Let's Rock Scotland coming in for a debrief. Unfortunately, that's not until the 28th of September, so we'd hope to get further feedback from them. Just kind of in general, in terms of the events, the Saturday event was one that was designed around an 80s theme, and that had artists from that particular era. And just by kind of that definition, it was a slightly older age group that came along to that event. The Sunday event was designed primarily for a younger audience. And at the end of both events, there was a very short fireworks display that took place. Under section 2.3, I've listed there the initial feedback from the various groups that attend the safety advisory group meetings. I've also given under section 2.4 some additional feedback from people who attended the event. One, in relation to disabled access issues, and then just following on the last kind of paragraph under that section, just some of the other events, the issues that arose. And these are things that will be discussed with the organisers on the 28th. Unfortunately for this paper, I didn't have feedback from Lothian Buses, but I'll kind of just go through that, Chair, just kind of some of the brief points. So in terms of the movement of people, the agreement that was in place was with Let's Rock Scotland and Happy Bus. That was the provider on the day. So in terms of any dialogue with Lothian Buses, that was minimal. What Lothian Buses were saying is that on that actual weekend, they did have additional events that they were catering for, namely the Royal Highland Show, and they've also set up a service, Cruise Link, to address the cruise ships that are coming into Leith. So there was actually quite a call on their resources, and they would have been stretched in any case. However, in terms of feedback, they reported that there was very few issues on the Saturday afternoon when people were coming to the events. It was more around the Saturday night. Now, what they do have with Lothian Buses is they get feedback in terms of how many people are left at a stop. They did say that there were some, and they did put on a couple of extra buses as and when they could on the Saturday night. But going forward, essentially what they're saying is, if they're aware of it, now that they've had some experience, they can look at putting additional resources on all of that, obviously on a commercial basis, rather than a direct arrangement with themselves and Lothian Buses. So, Chair, that's kind of pretty much the outline of the feedback. Happy to take any questions or feedback to the 28th September meeting.
Thanks very much for that, Ricky. I think it's important the report does come before committee. It's the largest event, I think, I'm right in saying that Midlothian's ever held.
Yes.
Not sure about the older age group on the Saturday. I was there, so hopefully I'll reduce that a wee bit. Members, got any questions? Ricky?
Just concerned at the position of the disabled individual and whether or not remedial action can quickly be identified.
Sorry, yeah, as I say, Councillor, on the 20th September, we'll meet with Let's Rock Scotland and we'll bring that to their attention, and then we can focus on that for future events. The Let's Rock Scotland brand have a contract with the Country Park for a three-year deal, so this was the first event. What they also gave me in terms of initial feedback is that whilst they will most definitely be going ahead with the Saturday 80s-style event, the Sunday event is not something that they thought at this stage they'd likely to go forward with. I don't know the reasons for that, and by inference I would imagine that if there is no Sunday event, they may not have the camping as well, albeit that didn't seem to cause any problems. So we'll feed all that back, and it's up to the Chair and members, if you want me to come back with further feedback, then I'm quite happy to do so.
Thanks. I think, Ricky, that was the main thing to come with the report, was the access for disabled. Do we have any? What controls do we have over that?
Again, as I outlined at the start, the whole purpose of the safety advisory group is to make sure that everybody attends that event in as safe a manner as potentially possible. So if there is something that's identified, and if it is disabled access, then we would discuss that and we wouldn't approve the event until such times as we've got something in place that we're happy with.
Thank you. Any other questions? Councillor Muirhead.
Can I just say there's a on page 50, there's a paragraph in there that says the security of the event appeared lax on occasions, with attendees' bags not being routinely searched, as indicated prior to the event. Is that somebody's opinion? Where is that actually coming from? Is that something that we need to be concerned about?
Yeah, so that came from a local member that was actually at the event, and they witnessed that. And I've also been approached by people at the event, and that's something that they noted. There wasn't that thorough search taking place. When I did speak to Let's Rock Scotland prior to arranging for the 28th, they did raise concerns about the outfit they were actually doing, the security. Reading between the lines, I don't think they'll be invited back. I think they want somebody that's going to take a more robust approach. So I think they're aware of that, and that's kind of how they're going to address that going forward.
It was just with this being a kind of public report, it highlights that the security perhaps wasn't what it should have been. I'm thinking in terms of it being a target. It's a lot of people in one location. And it's the kind of thing that, you know, the concerns would be that it would maybe be seen as being a kind of an easy target. And we obviously didn't want to have that. So it was just, you know, I'm glad to hear we're re-looking at that, and it maybe not be the case for next year.
Kenneth.
Yeah, just for Councillor Muirhead's and for other members, is assurance-wise, an event of this size is subject to what we call a SECO report, which is actually looking at the issues and the overall security. And within that, the event organisers will tell us what their search regime will be, so that we're fully aware just in terms of that, and does it meet the compliance standards of it. Disappointing to hear that, and there was some anecdotal feedback sent to ourselves as well just regarding that. So that will form one of the key points for us at the debrief, and in terms of next year, that feedback will go back through to our security advisors, so when they're undertaking that next year, that will be an overt part of their plan.
Thanks, Kenny. Just to expand on that slightly, the purpose of the searches is not only to perhaps confiscate alcohol, but to look for illegal substances and such like as well, I'm assuming.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Chair. That's the primary purpose. There is a clear...
Thank you and good morning, everyone, again. Just before I move into the sort of performance report for quarter one year to date, a couple of very brief updates from the National Service perspective. Members may be aware we have a new Community Safety Minister who has the responsibility for the Fire and Rescue Service, Ash Denham. A relatively local MSP from the City of Edinburgh, a very positive step, certainly from our perspective. And the discussions with our Chair and Chief Officer, with the Minister around our transformation agenda, have been positive. And there has also been some discussions at a national level with our trade union around the transformation and the potential for a new pay structure for firefighters, which we've discussed at this board before. From a personal perspective, I'm hoping to see, hopefully, fairly soon, some progress around that can allow us to start moving on the transformation agenda. And as soon as, obviously, I have that information, I'll bring it back to this board. On another positive note, the Newbridge Training Centre, which I've mentioned previously, is progressing at pace and on schedule. The partial handover of some of the buildings will take place early December, with the final completion date at the end of March 2019. I'd seek your advice on whether you'd like either a report to this board on where the project currently sits. Maybe we'll be quite well progressed by the time of the next board, and possibly even a presentation on that and where we currently are and what that will bring for the east of Scotland and, more importantly, for the fire stations in Mid Lothian. Happy to take any questions on any of that just now, or happy to move on.
Thanks, Steve. I think a report and possibly even a presentation would be useful if members would agree, Chair. Thanks.
Okay, I'll move on to the performance report. Normally, Dean Mack would be here. He does send his apologies from Australia. I think he's been there for about 3 weeks now. So I suppose in terms of our quarter one performance, and if I take you to page 11 of the papers, in some respects, no news is good news. And I look across the performance criteria that we report on, and as you will notice, the majority are green. And for me, that's a positive. The one that was causing ourselves concern and a number of our partners, predominantly the police in the area, was the 2017-18 figures for deliberate fires. And we've seen a marked reduction in deliberate fires in Midlothian, which is fantastic, given the dry weather that we've had at the start of for most of the summer, which is generally when we see a huge spike, as we did in the spring of last year. So very, very positive in terms of the work that's been going on to try and reduce those. So we've responded to 500 incidents in Midlothian, albeit an increase of 179 incidents compared with the reporting period last year. If I now take you to page 14, and looking at page 14 of the reports, looking at the accidental dwelling fires, 12 accidental dwelling fires in quarter one, with 50% of those occurring still in our single occupancy households, a third of those being in the over 65. So these are the sort of higher risk categories that David will maybe touch on when he talks about our prevention and protection activities. The main causal factor is still cooking at 84%. Fires, all of them confined to the room of origin, which would suggest relatively minor in nature, and that's also reflected in probably what I think is our most important statistic, is the fire casualties. And if we, for the first time for a while, in the graph that shows a reduction of accidental dwelling fires per 10,000 head of population, you'll notice, again, positively, that Midlothian has now dipped quite significantly below where the East average and the Scottish average sits. It's been there before in 16-17, but for a period of time we were above that line, and so I'm pleased to report that we are now back where I would like to see us continue, and that trend of those figures going down is something we'd also like to see continue. Over to page 16, in relation to the casualties. Obviously, the numbers of casualties are very low, so any fluctuations will cause quite a spike in any of the graphs. But in the period, we only had four casualties. Still four too many, but four casualties is not a hugely significant number. But we will not rest on our laurels, and we'll continue with our prevention work to ensure that we can reduce that. And ideally, if it was zero, then I would be in a very happy place. Out of those casualties, only one person had a precautionary check at the scene. So again, in terms of them being casualties, they've been exposed to some smoke, but only one of them required a precautionary check with the ambulance service. The other three were unharmed. The only other area I'm going to touch on briefly is the area that was in red, which is on page 22 of the report. And albeit for head of population, Midlothian is below the average for the East Service Delivery Area and of Scotland, it's still an area that is causing some concerns, and the fact that it's the only area that we have seen a negative performance trend. In terms of the work that we are doing to reduce that within our new Midlothian local plan, it's working in partnership with, strong partnership with our education colleagues, our local authority colleagues, and the businesses that are affected by unwanted fire alarm calls. It's not just the effect it has on us, it's the effect it has on education establishments, in particular schools. And as we run into the winter, that's when it's felt even more. If you're evacuating a school into the rain or snow, that's something, if we can avoid it, we will. So we have a dedicated enforcement officer in Midlothian, and we also have a UFAS champion for the area who is looking at a whole range of activities that we can be involved in, working with those partners to reduce unwanted fire alarm signals to the lowest that we possibly can. And that's me, so happy to take questions at this point.
Thanks very much for that report, Steve. Do members have any questions? Councillor McCall.
Thank you, Chair. Just trying to see which page it was, Steve. It was page 14, the all-accidental dwelling fires. And Midlothian West seems to be... There's a few, actually, that Midlothian West seem to be in the red. I just wonder, is there any particular reason for that? I was wondering about on the other page... On page 22, thank you again, Midlothian West. And I wondered with that particular one on page 22, is that because Midlothian West has got most of the A702 and the A701? You know, was it something to do with that? But I couldn't quite get my head around why the house fires would be particularly high in Midlothian West, and if we've got more single occupancy houses there or whatever. Thanks.
It's very all of the contributing factors to accidental dwelling fires, if you take in account the age, the occupancy factors, as you've mentioned, and a whole range of other sort of more often more complex factors. We couldn't say specifically why Midlothian West or Dalkeith, for example. So a lot of times it's to do with population density as well, not figures that I would have to sort of hand, but that's the sort of thing that we would have looked at previously. Unfortunately, we're looking at after the sort of horse has bolted, so it's difficult for us sometimes to sort of identify those greatest at need. And David will certainly touch on that very shortly in terms of the referral pathway for us to go out and try and speak to some of the people that are at highest risk, and we are trying to make sure that our resources are going to those areas, targeting the referral pathways in the areas where we are seeing fires, but at the same time working with our local authority partners in particular around identifying the individuals, and it is often just those individuals that are at greatest risk.
Thanks. It's an interesting point, and I think if there's what we can do, Kevin, maybe to try and establish what the demographic is in each ward and whether certain wards have people who are at higher risk, perhaps over 65 and single occupancy. Is there something we could do around that, Kevin?
Yes, just to say, Chair, that certainly we have provided in the past single household composition, that information that the council holds, and also in terms of the older demographic. I know health and social care colleagues have similarly provided identifiers to those properties. Obviously, with GDPR, we're a bit more restricted in terms of named individuals, but we do direct the fire service towards those households.
Thanks for that. Any other question, Councillor Smale?
It's a little bit off field. We're all very conscious of the disastrous fire at the Glasgow School of Art, and clearly Midlothian has a number of very large listed buildings which would have a great loss if there was to be a conflagration. Have we a good register of the buildings at risk? I'm thinking particularly of one very large listed building which is currently subject to planning and might be reconstructed, but is not actually occupied, but there are a number of other historic buildings in Midlothian where we should perhaps be more cautious as possible as to their vulnerability.
Actually, there was a piece of work which I probably have reported on briefly here before that came out of the fire at the hotel on Loch Lomond, the Cameron House Hotel, which had tragic consequences. So we have to put our resources to where the risk is greatest, and for me the life risk is the high priority. So we are currently doing a piece of work around some of the more historic-looking hotels that may have been converted from large country estates over the years, and there will be a number of those in Midlothian, which I'm linked to my learned colleague on my right. We've got an action plan to deal with those. If it's an empty building under construction, the loss from a significant fire will be significant. But we have to put our resources to the life risk first. The construction sites, as the Glasgow School of Art was, do not come under our legislation until they are finished and occupied. And at that point, we can then deal with it. Albeit, if it's a construction site, our local fire crews will be out there gathering operational intelligence to make sure that if something does happen there, we've got plans, we've got an idea of where the water sources are, and we've got an idea of how we would start to tackle that fire should it happen. So, yeah, there is a piece of work going on, but focusing just now on our hotel estate, where the life risk is.
I just add the piece of work for the Cameron House initiative that is completed. All hotels of that construction type have been audited by our officers, with local crews again going out and gathering intelligence for operational activities. Sorry.
No, just to make a general point, I mean, I don't know about the rest of you, but I certainly have been sitting over the summer, you know, watching the good weather, watching the reports on the TV about the fires that were happening in Greece and in California and things like that. And I was pleasantly surprised when, you know, I kept expecting us to have issues with deliberate starting the fires, and it didn't happen. And I think that's something well worth, you know, trying to get a handle on that, because it really... I was pleasantly surprised by it this year in particular, that we're seeing a reduction in that.
Thanks, Jim. Does that feed in a lot of the preventative work that's ongoing? Yeah, Steve.
Without stealing any more of David's thunder, I think it is. And you know, we saw a huge spike last year, which was really disappointing. Given the weather this year, we did expect it, and right across the sort of central belt, we had, I think, one large-scale wildfire in West Lothian. Touchwood, we're sort of almost beyond that now, given how wet it is. But across Midlothian, we have had very, very few field fires, grass fires, rubber, that we would normally expect, especially when the weather is so dry. So absolutely support the councillors. Overjoy at the fact that we've not been dealing with these when we'd sort of expect it. So I'll leave David to cover the prevention work after.
Good morning, everyone. I'll take you through the prevention and protection activities for the quarter. After positive news, I'll start off on a negative. The figures for the enforcement audits, which is on page 26, I believe. Figures are down for this quarter. This is explained by only having one enforcement officer for Midlothian, who was on annual leave for part of that month. So fully expect those figures to increase again for this next quarter. Home safety visits, slightly above our target for this quarter, like a total of 210 visits being completed by our crews across Midlothian. The focus mainly on high-risk households, and that ties in with the instance of fire where it is over 65s, and that is part of the process we're looking at with the Living Safe in the Home pilot project that we're currently underway with, and that is identifying people who are susceptible to falls within the home. If they meet certain criteria, we will then refer them to occupational health within the NHS based in Bonnerig. And in this quarter, I believe we've generated 14 referrals on that, and that's work ongoing throughout the year. I'll take you to page 29 online, which is partnership working. Our Human Action Team are continuing to deliver our Fire Skills Youth Engagement Programme with courses delivered to Lasswade High School and Dalkeith High School.
The youth engagement programme continues to target the issue of deliberate fire raising through various youth engagement activities, and as a result of last year's spike in secondary fires, we've done some youth engagement work with local youth groups across the area. Last year as well, we had courses with Y2K youth group, and this year expanded it to do Y2K youth group as Again and Aim High, who I believe are based in Woodburn. And local crews are engaging with these youth groups throughout the year, and we have actually delivered 2 fire skills courses to these groups during the summer holidays. That was in partnership with Police Scotland, MELDAP, and various other youth groups as well. As Steve said, we did expect to see an increase in deliberate fires, but I believe some of the work we've done with the youth groups, along with the fire skills courses delivered in schools, has had an effect on our stats for this quarter. On referrals from our partners continue to assist us with our home safety visits in identifying high-risk individuals. We are currently in the process of reinvigorating our current referral pathway partners and looking to establish new partnership referrals with other organisations. And again, this is work that will be continuing all year round. Again, we're looking for our partners to identify the high-risk individuals within the community to assist us to prevent the risk of fire. The last page of the document, page 30, I believe. Other work we're currently in progress with. Our community action team members attended our mental health course, which was led by Police Scotland, and that's led on to a local liaison officer being part of a collaboration group with various partners to support an activity last week at High School in raising awareness of mental health. There's going to be a mental health conference, 2 mental health conferences on the 27th of September and the 11th of October. And again, they have a guest speaker, the cyclist around the world, Bowman, I believe his name is. He's attending. So that's a great piece of work in partnership. We continue to work with our partners in the Liaison Officer for Midlothian, now assisting the delivery of the Level 2 Adult Support and Protection Training, which is delivered at the Brunton Hall, as well as sharing information with the Domestic Abuse Advisory Service. And lastly, I'd like to say, as part of the Youth Engagement Programme, Dalkeith, Lasswade and Newbattle High Schools have been identified for Scottish Fire and Rescue Service-led events, again targeting fire-related antisocial behaviour, and that will be delivered in partnership again with Police Scotland and other various youth groups. And that's the report from me. Happy to take questions.
Thanks very much. David, just Councillor McCall. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. the referral stuff's looking really positive. Just under the mental health courses that you're going to be running, just wondered how hoarding fits in there. Obviously, people who are hoarders, they're going to have more increase of fire there. I suppose it's how do we identify those people and get into them?
That's part of what we do our referral pathway training to our partners. We do mention hoarding in the presentation, and we have a policy in place where we can gauge the amount of hoarding and the risk to that person and to ourselves if we have to enter that house, as well as other partners. So it is all mentioned as part of our referral pathway training.
One question for me, David. Can you just give us a brief insight into what the fire skills courses are that you deliver to the youth groups?
Fire skills is what was known as cool down crew. I don't know if you're aware of that. It's just been rebranded. It's basically the same. We teach them life skills. It's for those individuals who may not be engaging with education, who may be on the cusp of low-level offending. They may have low self-esteem. It's about team building and giving confidence to that individual, as well as getting our fire safety message across to that group. When we go to each, it be a youth group or a school, we put the sort of criteria to the school, and we're hoping for them to give us the correct students, if you like, who could benefit from that type of course. And again, that course is delivered with, we ask the police to attend, MELDAP attend to give advice, and in other areas, we get community wardens involved as well. So it is definitely delivering partnership to each group.
Thank you. Margaret, do you have a question?
It was just briefly to say about the hoarding that it does increasingly come up as an adult protection issue, both in the mental health team and in the community care team in Fairfield. And I think there's now a pretty routine referral to Scottish Fire and Rescue if it is a hoarding issue, as well as obviously trying to take other actions to help sort the situation out.
Thanks for that, Margaret.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you very much for the report. That takes us on to Police Scotland, item 5.2.1, Police Scotland Scrutiny Report. So, Chief Inspector Clark.
Good morning, folks. Just a couple of minutes of your time just to talk about some national work. You'll probably most be aware that Mr Livingstone takes over as Chief Constable today, although he's been interim designate. What does that actually mean? Well, there have been some other absences from our executive, and I don't have the answer to that, but I would imagine he will be placing new appointments or change of portfolios as we speak, as Mr Mawson, who was the Assistant Chief for Local Policing that covered East, has retired. So I'm awaiting appointment of my boss, bottom line. But certainly from our perspective, it was just to give you that awareness. Locally, we have some divisional changes. I have two superintendents, one due to retire and one who has transferred out. I have Richard Haran coming. He's a colleague who lives locally, and another colleague, Angus McInnes, who are due to touch down. Angus, you will have more to do with. He will be the partnership superintendent, and I will try and hopefully, if it's all right with you, Chair, to give him exposure here to help help him land efficiently. Overall, quarter one national figures were embargoed, I think, probably just about till today, but you'll see in terms of the crime stats. What I can say divisionally, I'm satisfied that we're performing well, and in particular in a Midlothian context. There are some general trends, in particular the rise of inquisitive crime, etc. A lot of that focusing on shoplifting and cybercrime. And again, Midlothian have been held as best practice, and particularly for the gentleman to my right, about some of the work that he's done on shoplifting that's already embedded in other areas of the country. Have been signposted to speak with the Chief Inspector about, you know, how can they embrace that to try and have the required impact. The last thing I just want to mention, just following on from the mental health side, which is, as we all know, the stats that we had in terms of our transformation is that one in four are likely to be affected by a mental episode, and that's quite a stark statistic. And again, from a demand perspective, it's big for us in Police Scotland, as other blue light services. So I'm working very closely with the national aspect, but also trying to exploit, you know, bits of training or ways of raising awareness and see. So there are a couple of things that we're doing divisionally that we're plugged in at, and I'm hopeful that maybe next time, once I've moved it into a steady state, that I can report back. But again, it's about working together collaboratively and sharing our expertise, because certainly it's a huge demand for us. So I'm not going to say anything else unless there's anything that you would like to ask me personally, nationally or divisionally or locally that I can answer. Nothing too hard, please.
No, that was great. Thanks. And I see Mr. Livingstone just passed our congratulations on his appointment. Okay, any questions or comments?
Okay. Good morning, Chair, members. Just take you through the police report. It's a new look police report, as you've probably identified in there. We've split into three parts. First, the executive summary, which gives you the high-line figures. Second aspect of it, the achieving priorities and outcomes, i.e. how did we achieve these figures, or what were we trying to do to achieve the figures. And then lastly, some highlights over that quarter regarding operations and prevention-related activity. Just in terms of the stats-wise, then, in terms of missing persons and adults, slight increase in there, but very, very low numbers still at this point, but an additional seven cases in the first quarter. Bogus workman crimes, good to see that we've actually not had what we class as a bogus workman crime. That's not to say there's not been attempts, but just in terms of people being successful, in the first quarter, didn't see anybody achieving that, thankfully. Domestic abuse incidents, quite a significant rise in there. You'll see that up quite a bit, up 32.2% in terms of domestic-related incidents. However, I just want to throw some caution in there that when you actually benchmark that against the five-year average, it is only marginally above that. But I think what we have seen is we've seen a rise in domestic incidents in that first quarter, and I think a good bit of that is attributable to the good weather that we've had and an overindulgence of alcohol, which I'm sure everybody will be aware of, and the consequences that come with that. Heat incidents, a positive figure there, with these numbers having been reduced in that first quarter, again, quite significantly. Probably one of the most positive ones for me, though, is antisocial behaviour incidents. I keep on speaking, and I heard my colleagues for the fire service speaking about that period of good weather, and whilst we all bask in the sunshine, it brings problems for all blue light agencies, I have to say, and in particular around about manifesting itself in antisocial behaviour. So to have an 11% decrease in the first quarter is fantastic, and I certainly take cognizance as well with the fire reasons, like my colleagues. We were always half anticipating at one point there would be a significant fire somewhere along there, and I think there's a lot of partnership working went into that, and I know that we invested a lot of time in our rural crime initiative, utilising the quad bikes and getting out into our more remote areas and engaging with youth groups who tend to hang about within these areas as well. And I think that these figures are testament to the results of that engagement process. Drug supply and cultivation, whilst that is static, I've said this before, is that I anticipate that to rise and rise quite significantly as the year progresses. There's been a significant increase in our related activity in the first quarters. That's borne out more when you see the possession figures there, which are up quite significantly. But I do know that there's a number of different cases that are just waiting forensics coming back, and I'm confident that we will see a rise in the number of drug supply and production and cultivation figures come the end of this fiscal year. Moving on to domestic housebreakings, probably the one that jumps out the page to you when you see that stat. But what I will say to you, folks, is bear in mind that the numbers-wise are still in our first quarter there. I know for a fact, having just looked at my stats before I came away this morning, that in terms of percentage-wise, that gap is shrinking, thankfully, for us. But again, I want you to benchmark that against the 3 and the 5 year average. Last year, I came to every single board meeting and crowed about how successful we were. We had a fantastic year last year. This year, I'm not going to shy away from it. It's been slightly more challenging. I think it's a mixture of two things. One, we are absolutely still being targeted by our neighbouring authority crime groups, with a propensity to break in and for the high-value vehicles. But I've also noticed this year as well is that there's actually still quite a fair bit of activity at a local level. And when we have a couple of significant nominals within our area who are extremely prevalent, it doesn't take a lot for these figures to be skewed slightly. But I'll give assurances that we're absolutely on top of that. In terms of detection rates, we're still sitting around about 40%, which is significantly higher than the vast majority of places throughout the country. So whilst there's a few more being committed, we are still very hot on the trails in terms of detection-wise. But when you actually take together the whole package of housebreaking, it's a positive picture for Midlothian. I've been up here now for going near 4 years, and I've spoke about it, about the epidemic in relation to sheds and garages being targeted. I think we've done a lot of work with partners in about the lockdown crime campaign, and we've hammered home a lot of stuff from about people needing to take more security. They're significantly down this year. And overall house breakings, with a couple of that along with business house breakings, we're down, which is a real positive picture for Midlothian, which I can't see is replicated elsewhere in the country, which has seen a significant rise in terms of acquisitive crime. So whilst the domestic element looks pretty harsh at the moment, overall house breakings are down in Midlothian. As is crimes of dishonesty, again, that's another positive picture, folks, and bucking the trend. There is a lot of work ongoing around about that, in the shoplifting, which we'll speak about and how we're achieving that, but a positive picture there. Very positive picture in the first quarter in serious violent crime, down 67%. It's certainly something we need to be crowing about because that's a significant figure. Again, when I couple that with the good weather and the overindulgence of alcohol, And again, we're looking at a positive picture in terms of road casualties, with overall KSIs down over 56%. And missing children, slight decrease there, but again, you'll see the impact. The volume's high on that, and again, in terms of resource-wise, it's a hugely demanding issue for us in the front line, and there's not a day goes by where we're not searching for a child or a young person in the area. All of these come with significant risks, so they have to be prioritised accordingly. So how are we achieving that in terms of the bogus crime and missing person there? I do have to give real credit, and I've said it before, the amount of activity that goes on with Operation Manarda, the national campaign, which is tackling bogus workmen, travelling criminals, Midlothian, have a real, real successful model with that, and it's developing all the time, working in conjunction with all our partners in tackling this particular issue. It's fair to say that I would say if we're not the national leaders, we'll be very, very close to it in that regard. Domestics, the bit that I want to put on here is round about the bail checks and the use of police bail now when people coming through custody. We're needing to be creative, and we are, just in terms of trying to protect victims. So if we release somebody from custody, it's now within our gift to can put special bail conditions in to preclude that individual and some of their behaviour as well. And with the new criminal justice bill that was introduced earlier on this year, with the onus being more on liberation as opposed to custody, that's now more important than ever in terms of protecting our victims. Antisocial behaviour and hate incidents, again, just some of the stuff I want to highlight, and it'll touch upon and it'll go through and the work with our MCATs with their underage drinking initiative, which has been ongoing from the sort of Easter period and right through the school holiday period, and has been hugely successful, and I think that plays a significant part in reducing the number of antisocial behaviour incidents that there have been. And you'll see a couple of specific bits of work that we're doing with some of our minority groups there. A lot of work, and we have a fantastic working relationship with our mosque in Bonnyrigg. And also there's been a lot of work done with our Syrian refugee families, to the point now we've identified and have a single point of contact for them with one of our local community officers. So that relationship is working well. I've already touched upon the drug supply and my expectations that will rise for it, and you'll see in there the drop-in surgeries that we're hoping to try and attract some more community information intelligence, we call that, but it's information for the public, and I know that my community officers are being tasked with trying to get out and about and host some surgeries within their local areas. Crimes of dishonesty, lockdown crime campaign, touched upon that before, and that continues to be successful. And for those of you who are out and about, you'll probably see your wraps now around lampposts and things in some of the more prominent areas within Midlothian with high footfall. The Straight and Retail Crime Partnership is progressing really well. And I know that the Peel Group, there's some expansion plans for Straight and, but the Peel Group have invested £130,000 in terms of security-wise, in terms of fencing, and an £80,000 CCTV system, of which the police are now going to be getting far greater access to that, and having the feedback from my prevention officer, apparently the quality is first class. So that's a real step in the right direction in there. And I spoke about the Rural Crime Initiative as well, about rural thefts, livestock, again massively successful, and we aim to repeat that at the back end of the year again this year. Violent crime figures are excellent, long may that continue, and I have to give testament to the work that we're doing with our licensees, our detailed nighttime dispersal plan, and a robust enforcement of bail curfews, particularly around about our high hitters. You'll see that a lot of that work is undertaken by my MCATs, but it's significant. This is us and having the ability to keep our recidivist offenders on their toes, where they receive visits from us at all times of the day and night time to check that they're complying with their bail conditions. Road casualties, good and positive picture. Again, increased use of the camera safety partnership. Again, I've touched upon when I first came up here 4 years ago, we had no sites within Midlothian. I think we now have about 7 identified sites, and they're prevalent in our area. More of my local community officers have been trained in the handheld radar checks, along with my MCATs, my funded officers, and they are regularly out now within these identified community hotspots. And probably more positive for me on the prevention side is the engagement with vulnerable road users. There was a significant event recently at Dobie's with elderly drivers. We have regular engagement with motorbikers. They meet every Thursday just off the A702, and we take that opportunity every single time they meet to engage both through local road policing officers and my local community officers, just to hammer home that message, because anybody that seen the BBC website at the weekend will notice that motorbikers are, in terms of risk-wise, is a huge risk, with a further 3 over the weekend, unfortunately losing their lives on our roads and motorbikes. Serious and organised crime, again, it's a positive picture with regards to this. When I know everybody likes the seizure of cash and assets from our known criminal groups, and certainly in Midlothian this year, in the first quarter, we've already superseded our full year last year. So we are hurting people where it hurts within their pockets. And then when we come to achieving priorities and outcomes, I touched earlier on there just round about the Let's Rock and the SECO reports. And I think it's probably members need to know that any significant event that we think there's going to be high footfall or carries risk, we will take an active interest and ask our specialists to give a report on that. So we've done one for Let's Rock. There's one being done for Midstock, which is this coming weekend. And I'm also conscious we have our homecoming parade, a significant event in the Pennycook area, which we have in the military, carries that additional element of risk. So just to give members some peace of mind, we do take these things seriously and we put in protective measures. And lastly, moving on to the highlights of events, operations and activity, you'll see in there a number of different things which I've touched upon already, but probably the most pleasing thing for me is the Best Bar None Awards. We've invested a lot of time and a lot of effort into this over the last few years, and moved from having just a couple of pubs and clubs to up to last year, we got 14. We now have over 30 have signed up to take part in this, and what that affords individuals is that licensed premises are being run to an accredited standard, with licensees taking full responsibility in them and their staff, which can only be a positive thing for the whole of Midlothian. And on that, before I move on to MCAT, I'm quite happy to take questions on the main body of the report.
Thanks very much, Kenny. Councillor McCall.
Thank you, Chair. Could I say, first of all, I really like the layout of the report. Just makes things a lot simpler, which is always good, I think, when we've got lots of reports to read. I wanted to ask about two things. On page 35, Kenny, domestic HBs.
Yep.
Can you just clarify for me, although the heading's house break-ins, does that also mean slip-ins, so when they're not, when people are going into an unlocked house, is that included in that, or would that be included in something else?
No, slip-ins, they've not had to force their way, and housebreaking is when they've actually had to forcibly enter. The theft slip-ins would come under like the overall acquisitive crime, right, categories.
Right, thanks for that, because again, I think in Pennycook over the summer, with the nice weather, people were leaving their windows open, back doors open, and I think a lot of people learned a nasty lesson there. The other thing I wanted to ask you about was shoplifting. And I was advised by one of my colleagues this morning that it's not shoplifting, it was housebreaking, that somebody broke into someone's house in Pennycook and stole food. That's all they took. They took tins or food from the house. Are we seeing an increase in that sort of thing and in shoplifting of food rather than other
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that that is the case. You'll notice now in supermarkets, some of the meats have now got security tags, you know, on them just for that very reason. I think what is interested, and I touched upon the Community Safety and the Community Justice Board, I read an analytical product that had been sent to us just round about the impact of universal credit in shoplifting, and of real interest to me was the expected bit where universal credit comes in and you see a rise in shoplifting. Midlothian were one of five or six authority areas where that is absolutely crystal clear in terms of that bit. So there is no doubt whatsoever, just in terms of the economic process and shoplifting, they're going hand in hand, and Midlothian has shown that.
I know that East Lothian had universal credit way before us. Leslie, am I right in thinking, do you look after East Lothian as well? So is there anything that we can learn from East Lothian, you know, with them having had universal credit for longer? Is there anything that we can learn from that side?
I think East Lothian from my knowledge, from my colleagues and things down there, they did see a rise within it, and they've taken a kind of enforcement route, you know, and try to target some of the recidivists. I can give for the Midlothian perspective, we're looking at a number of different fronts. We are absolutely looking at our recidivists and targeting those, and we've been successful in getting antisocial behaviour orders, which actually preclude some of our individuals, and I have to say there's been two or three real prolific shoplifters for Edinburgh who are preying on this area, and we've been successful in getting sort of some enforcement elements round about that. We had started a bit of work, and we're going to continue in this and round about referring identified individuals just on that food basis of individuals who are actually stealing to feed, to actually looking to try and divert them and signpost them to the Trussell Trust and the food bank scheme. And then lastly, you'll see the ongoing work in terms of prevention that we're doing out at Straighton, round about that, you know, having the kind of shop watch system in there, the regular sharing of information with retailers and my staff, and we're hoping to try and replicate that and take that into our next biggest concern, which is Dalkeith Town Centre, because it's quite apparent there's a complete disproportionate amount of shoplifting takes place at Straighton and Dalkeith Town Centre. So we're trying to learn and take all the good points for the Straighton and hopefully embed that within Dalkeith just to make it a harder target.
Sorry, finally, can I just ask, are you able to share the report about the universal credit mirroring the shoplifting? Thank you.
Yeah, as I spoke about the Community Safety and Justice Board, unfortunately it's GPS marking at this point precludes me, but I have said that I'm willing to go back to the author and see if I can get a sanitised version, even just to particularly show the graph, which actually just shows you them going in parallel for the time universal credit came in and to the takeoff and shoplifting. So I'm pretty hopeful I can get at least the graph.
Thanks for that. It's interesting. I don't think there's much doubt there's a link there between universal credit and shoplifting and poverty. It's been an indicator of poverty. Any other questions or comments? Councillor Smith?
Just looking at crimes of dishonesty, the banks are obviously taking a much more active role in preventing internet crime, but I just wonder how that's impacting you operationally and whether there are new scams coming along.
I think I'm being realistic here. For every scam that we try and get on top of, there's a new one. It just seems to pop up and appear. Technology, and I think it's certainly one. And I think having read our chief's message this morning, just in terms of the change in policing, you know, over his 26 years, we're now at that place we're doing the virtual policing, you know, so that this bit, you know, the IT aspect of it, it's a moving feast. It definitely is. What I will say in terms of working with the banks, we're probably working closer with banks and financial institutions more closely now than we've ever done. They are aware of it in terms of the scam. It's costing them a fortune as well, so they have a vested interest in trying to work with us and trying to tackle this. I'll also give them massive credit as well in terms of the work that they do round about bogus workmen as well. Their vigilance, when I speak about us having no crimes, a large part of that is down to the vigilance of bank staff who have got individuals coming in asking for £3,000 and stopping it at source and contacting us and that. So the work that we do with financial institutions is growing by the day. But in terms of
our individuals who are that way inclined, they're becoming harder and harder just in terms of the schemes and their ability to can actually circumvent prevention messages that are put in place. But it's not something we're going to shy away from.
Certainly, I've noticed recently that the quality of the dodgy emails that you get are much better. I mean, it used to be that, you know, you didn't need to be terribly savvy to suss it out because the spelling's wrong and all that type of thing. But nowadays, there's stuff coming through that you've really got to think about. And you can imagine maybe elderly or more vulnerable people getting easily caught up with that. My mother's on the phone every few days because I've got her alerted and she phones me and talks me through what she's got. But, I mean, you know, if you've not got that instilled in you, it can be a very dangerous kind of situation that you're in.
I think it's a very good point well made, and one of the big challenges is when you've had a flurry of emails, and a lot of them can come out with the UK, and they are fairly, as you say, better dressed, and then it's followed up with a phone call to say, oh, you have been targeted, but if you give me your details now, we can save you the grief. So it's like the second step. And we've certainly noticed, you know, a more targeted and coordinated. I don't want to, it sounds like I'm praising them, but I would say you're absolutely right. It's much more, I don't want to say sophisticated either, but it's a big, big business. And as I say, it's a difficult area to police, you know, because it's faceless.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, I actually got a message via Messenger, Facebook on Friday night from a friend saying, oh, how you doing? Listen, can you do me a favour? Have you got internet banking? And I emailed a message back. I said, what's up? She went, oh, I just wondered, could I transfer money into your bank account? Because I'm waiting on my ISA. And I just thought, and this is from someone that I know, and I'm like, I'm just going to ignore that. But they'd managed to hack into her Facebook access to Messenger, and then of course I was mooching around on Facebook thinking, should I contact her mum or her sister and say, you know, this is a bit dodgy. The next minute, message from mum, she's been hacked. Message from sister, she's been hacked. But it looked really genuine, you know, apart from the fact that it was a bit of an odd request from someone who is not a particularly close friend of mine, just a more a sort of acquaintance, asking me if she could put money in my bank account. It's just a bit. But people might have well been caught out by that, especially when it's coming through Messenger, not a faceless email, but Messenger that's got, you know, their smiley, happy face on it.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, happy to move on to the next item, 5.2.2, CAR report.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Again, folks, don't want to dwell too much on this other than to say it's a very, very positive report. And you'll see the levels of activity and work that the funded teams have put in this first quarter, and they continue to do so. They bring a real sense of proactivity to the approach for me in terms of policing-wise. I spoke earlier on there about the number of different individuals who are there doing the bail curfew checks, and there's no doubt whatsoever that element of business is certainly reaping the rewards in terms of keeping some of our harder and probably more hardened criminals on their toes. They certainly know my staff, and my staff know them. They've also the good work round about the proactivity and the underage drinking. Part of it has certainly helped considerably in tackling the antisocial behaviour aspect of it. Their work round about the drug activity is first class, now having the ability and the capability, I would say, of actually working in real-time intelligence, I get a bit of intelligence because the shift pattern that my MCATs work, I have an MCAT team working every single day, so I have the ability and have that resource that I can allocate that and allow them to progress and work on that real-time intelligence, which is absolutely reaping the rewards. But They've got a number of different aspects. You'll see, I spoke about them being handheld radar checked before. You know, in that first quarter, 36 static road checks done and a number of mobile road checks. And when you just look at that area of business, six vehicles seized from the roads because they're unroadworthy or don't have insurance. And you look at the number of breath tests that they've been through there, including five positives. That's removing dangers for community folks. So, plaudits, where plaudits are due, they're a really hard working bunch and committed group of officers who genuinely want to make a significant difference to the lives of our residents within Midlothian, and certainly in terms of hitting the ground, they've certainly hit the ground running. The challenge for them now, and they hear it from me every day, is maintaining that standards or actually looking to enhance that standards. But I can't praise them highly enough for what they are, and they're a very, very sought after position. As we've just found out, we had one of our individuals is transferring to Dumfries and Galloway just due to his wife's business. And I've never had a post where I've had as many people applied to fill that position. So that's testament to where people want to achieve and the type of work that they're doing. And on that basis, Chair, I'm happy to take any questions that you may have.
Thanks very much, Kenny. I'd just like to elaborate slightly on one issue, the bail curfew checks. I think you've touched on that a couple of times as well in the scrutiny report. I think sometimes it's easy for us outside the police to look at figures and just see there's been 305 bail checks, 16 of which were non-compliant. But it's just really to elaborate and see what actually lies behind that. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but my thinking is that if you live in Midlothian and you're an offender and you're subject to bail conditions or a curfew, you know that there's a good chance, a more than good chance, that you're going to get a knock at the door at some time through the day or night, every day. And I think that helps reduce the risk of re-offending and actually also provides a level of reassurance to victims as well. Would you be able to elaborate a bit on that?
Yeah, you've actually depicted it fairly well, I have to say, Chair. If somebody goes to the court and they receive, let's say, for instance, a common one is they have a curfew that they need to remain within their home address between 7 o'clock at night and 7 o'clock the following morning, I can give you a guarantee that these individuals will receive a check, and the MCATs are probably the most prevalent for that. In terms of where that sits in priorities in day-to-day policing and responding to policing, it's often quite hard to do, but we have in this dedicated resource, we have the ability to do that. And I have to say, when it says between 7 at night and 7 in the morning, we don't go along at quarter past night, just at 9, just to be nice. It's varied. That could be at 1:30 in the morning. They get a chap at the door, and whether you like that or not, that's part of their curfew checks. That is what takes place. And if there is non-compliance, we will send a report through to the fiscal, and we'll then ask for additional things to be put in place, like the individual must answer the door to police and things. But there is a real useful tool, both in terms, as I say, them knowing that they will be inspected and that it will be followed through if they fail to comply. But what it also does is it actually affords us an opportunity to have engagement with these individuals on a daily basis. They don't like it. Some of them don't like it, but others actually, there is that element of rapport where we can start engaging and trying to break that cycle. But it is an important tool. And I'm probably not speaking out of turn here. I would like to see the individuals who regularly breach their bail for there to be something slightly more punitive in terms of what they receive at the court. But that will certainly not stop us from continuing to actively enforce bail curfews and bail checks.
Thank you, Kenny. Any other questions or comments? Councillor Murrett.
I don't think we can underestimate the impact that some recidivists can have on their very much local communities, and to have that kind of enforcement of the bail checks, because I've certainly experienced that, where I've known that an individual shouldn't be out and about at a certain time, and they are, and you know that they're going to be the ones that are up to no good and they're causing more problems and your shed break-ins and all that type of thing. And so You know, I think this has got a really positive impact on local people, local communities, when you know, these people are just basically made to, where possible, you know, adhere to what the conditions that that's been put on them. So as I say, I don't think we can underestimate the impact that can have.
Anyone else? Councillor Smale.
We've, I think, managed to avoid the topic of fly tipping, but here it comes. In terms of the community action teams, how do you feel they will be able to help with that problem? Is there a communication issue about how individuals who observe this can communicate with them?
Yeah, and I think at the last meeting, I think we discussed that kind of that grey area that sort of existed in terms of who has primacy, you know, in terms of fly tipping. What I can give you an assurance, Councillor, is that the MCATs have been involved in some inquiries, working very, very closely with our colleagues in environmental health and within council areas. I do think it's probably a growing area of business. I don't think there's any doubt whatsoever about that, and it's probably something I think worthwhile that we'll take within the community safety partnership arena, and probably look at, do we have that type of campaign, you know, that media wise and start giving people clear direction in terms of where to report and how they can report it. And it's probably a bit of work for us to be doing through the community safety partnership.
I probably should have touched on it in the minutes, actually, the fly tipping. Adele Ryan gave us the report at the last Police and Fire Board meeting, and I think she did follow up to provide clarity that there is a mechanism for landowners whereby they can make an appointment at Stobhill or at Pennycook and go and dispose of the rubbish that was dumped on their land as well. So that mechanism also exists. Questions or comments? Okay. Conclude the meeting. Next meeting is 19th of November. Thanks very much, everybody.